Hi, and welcome once again to the Magic
Radio.
I always start talking over the intro there, but welcome once again to the Mad Scientist Exposed online radio show. And I thought it'd be fun today to talk about getting off the grids, because that's how the power structures want to enslave us, is getting us all intertwined with their grids, like the food delivery system and the water delivery system and even the trash removal system. And some of these we just can't do without unless you own your own dump, or you want to haul your own stuff to the to a waste, you know, a dump somewhere. So I've got some articles on, you know, that I've pulled up on, you know, electricity, generating your own electricity. There's a story out a few, well, I guess about a year and a half ago, about the guy that invented that 5-hour, what do you call it, a 5-hour energy drink that you can get in convenience stores and Circle K's. And he's now a Mr. Billionaire. He's really struck it big with this energy drink. I don't know why somebody would want a little symbol of stuff when they could enjoy a nice cup of coffee. But anyway, he wants to give back to the world by developing this giant flywheel stationary bicycle where you can pedal for a day and it'll power your whole house. You can pedal for an hour and it'll generate enough electricity to power your house for a day. And I guess, you know, if an hour is too long for you, you could trade off with family members and all this. And I remember reading up about it and seeing if it was ever going to be available in the U.S. Because when you hear about these things, these wonder inventions that, you know, they're going to launch on the third world, then why aren't they ever available for Americans? Because Americans want this kind of stuff too, and it's because they want to keep you tied to the grid here, whatever kind of grid it is. And I know there's been a lot of pushback on the solar front, but in a lot of places it's illegal to have solar panels that aren't connected to the grid, so that your solar panels will go down if the grid goes down. The theory is that they don't want random voltages traveling down the lines while they have repairmen working on the down grid, but it should just be an automatic disconnect rather than banning you from not being, you know, you have your choice whether you want to be on the grid or not. This guy, though, with the large flywheel bicycle, I did some reading on it, and it just kind of struck me as not really technically feasible. Like, it's big words, but it's not really going to get us out of this. And there's an article here on treehugger.com from last October. And they have a diagram, and it's a picture with a little diagram. It's kind of like intertwined picture and diagram. Pedaling for an hour in Manaj Bhargava's free electricity hybrid bike can supply 24 hours of electricity for a rural household. In a world where up to half the population either has no access to electricity whatsoever or only severely limited access, a home energy device powered by humans could have a big impact on the developing world. And one philanthropist is willing to put his money where his mouth is in order to potentially change the lives of billions. Excuse me. Manaj Bhargava, founder of the company that makes the popular energy-boosting supplement 5-Hour Energy, is worth somewhere in the neighborhood of $4 billion. And instead of spending that money on luxury items or a lavish lifestyle, he's focused on making a difference in the world, in part by tackling some of the pressing issues of our time, most notably energy and water. Bhargava has helped pledged 90% of his wealth to charity and research via the Bill and Melinda Gates and Warren Buffett pledge, saying, "Service to others seems the only intelligent choice for the use of wealth. The other choices, especially personal consumption, seem either useless or harmful." Now, the fact that he's involving Bill and Melinda Gates in his project, or Warren Buffett, I don't know too much about Warren Buffett, but other than he tends to universally side for globalist candidates, because he's invested in all these things that he wants to sell you. But Bill and Melinda Gates have made public statements about their intentions to depopulate the world. So it's not like they want to empower anybody. They don't like India. There's just too many people over there, you know. It's for Bill and Melinda Gates. The country of India has sued them over the horrible damage that the pushing the Gardasil vaccine on India has done to so many girls there. Anyway, so I don't know that this will ever be available in the U.S. because they're not going to let it out of their hands unless there's some way to reduce the population of your family by using it. I don't know. Maybe you'll pedal along and they'll have a little zapper in the seat that you won't feel and they'll render you invertible. I don't know. I'm a little bit cynical there. But anyway, Bhargava also founded the Billions in Change movement, and they've got a link over that, which aims to build a better future by creating and implementing solutions to serious problems facing the world in the areas of water, energy, and health. The new documentary outlines several innovations that have the potential to make a very real impact on the lives of many, including a stationary bike generator, a new medical device, what kind of medical device, a new take on geothermal energy, and a method of producing potable water at scale. The first of these devices, the free electric hybrid bike, is described as a small, light, and simple, and said to be able to supply a rural household's electricity needs for 24 hours with a single hour of pedaling. A person pedals the bike, which drives a flywheel, which then turns the generator and charges a battery. And in a village setting, one bike could be bought with pooled funds, and then additional batteries for individual homes could be charged and then swapped out as needed. So I guess you keep somebody pedaling all day. I don't know. Maybe you hook up horses to one of those circular, or donkeys to one of those circular cross beams they used to pump water with, the old-fashioned dikes and things like that. I don't know. Anyway, why would you want to pool funds with another family? If the point is getting off the grid, why build another grid somewhere in a little village over there? You want these, maybe family members want to share, but if I wanted off the grid, I would want off the grid. And just give me my own bike and flywheel, and the rest of the neighbors can get their own. So, anyway, this is going to affect a few billion people, says Bhargava. According to National Geographic, he plans to begin the distribution of some 10,000 of these free, free electric bikes in India next year. And that doesn't mean that they're free. I'm sure that they will pay something. Although details on the bikes and their manufacturer aren't yet available. The above video clip, which they have embedded in their link here, is from a documentary also titled Billions in Change, which highlights the work being done at a lab co-founded by Bhargava and former Chrysler CEO Tom Lasorda called Stage 2 Innovations, which is described as being the most well-funded playhouse for engineers you can possibly have. The documentary also touches on work being done on the Rainmaker, a car-sized machine that can convert seawater or polluted water to fresh water at a rate of 1,000 gallons per hour, as well as the Renew device, a blood flow enhancement machine, and Limitless Energy, a graphene cable-based geothermal energy solution. Sounds like a dialysis thing. I don't know. The world is facing some huge problems. There's a lot of talk about how to solve them. But talk doesn't reduce pollution or grow food or heal the sick. It certainly does if people are sharing ideas. That's kind of a nasty thing to say. That takes doing. Well, talk leads to doing. The thought, you have the thought, you have the idea, and then you express it and you develop it and you do it. You know, that's how inventions work. This film is a story about a group of doers, the elegantly simple inventions they have made to change the lives of billions of people, and the unconventional billionaire spearheading the project. Well, this could be a real good thing if they're going to need to power energy. If we're going to do space travel, we need to get off all the earthly grids, and this certainly could be something of use on a planet we go to. If we want to set up colonies there, and that's what they're saying about Mars, and the U.S. needs to abandon the moon, but I know China wants to go there and probably kick our flag over, and I think Russia is planning to go there, and I'm sure some other countries. So I don't know why. Well, I was there when the U.S. abandoned the moon. I was old enough to remember Jimmy Carter and the line he sold us that we're spending too much money on space travel, you know, on human space travel. We should just do a few, you know, probes out there if we really must. But we need to spend this money on the poor. We shouldn't be spending it on going out and just, you know, sending humans out into space. That's just an extravagance that we can't afford. And, you know, of course, what it does is it crushes the dreams of an entire people. All the inventions that come out of that, you know, that we would have needed, you know, we could have been in this position where everybody had free electricity just by pedaling 30 years ago if we hadn't stopped going to the moon, you know. So this is this could be a wonderful thing. It's really sad that the people with the agenda to getting their fingers in it, and I hope this guy has the sense to recognize when other billionaires aren't necessarily on your side. I mean, here we have, you know, this election going on is just about this. We have George Soros and his puppet versus Donald Trump. These are two billionaires that have very different futures, visions of the future of mankind. One wants to expand and go out into space and make dreams come alive and have, you know, breathe vibrance back into the American economy and the American spirit. And the one that just wants to kill everybody for sport. I mean, this guy is well into his 80s. I mean, he's melting like an old rotten candle as you look at him. I mean, all the pictures of George Soros' face, his eyes are just sagging down. I mean, he's uglier than Darth Vader without his mask on. So it's, you know, sometimes evil is obvious like that, and sometimes evil puts on a mask of beauty. And Lucifer is supposed to be the angel of light, but he lies to your face as soon as look at you, and that's where pure evil is. So anyway, so that's that about the little pedal bike, and that would be the simplest solution, and it, you know, keeps you fit and trim as you power your house and all that, and as long as the seat's comfortable. This drawing here has a very uncomfortable looking seat on it. I have I love riding a recumbent bicycle. I have two that are street-worthy. They actually, you know, you can ride them out on the street up and down the neighborhood. They're very nice. And there's a whole movement of recumbent bikes because the upright bicycles are just plain too painful on people's tushes to ride. But, you know, I have the Sun brand, which, you know, there's some that kind of like lie on the street. You're very low to the ground and in order to brake, not have a lot of wind resistance. Mine, I'm fine with the wind resistance. Mine's an upright sitting bike, but it's the recumbent. So I'm like sitting like in the dining room chair pedaling, but it's really comfortable seating. I have two of those so I can invite friends to ride with me. And then I've got an exercise recumbent bike in the family room that the seat is hard and flat and very uncomfortable and frankly painful. And so I hardly ever ride that. I mean, once in a while I'll push a chair up to it and ride it backwards or something. That's the only way I can figure to sit comfortably on it. So I don't know what I'm going to do with it. Maybe I can find a way to replace the seat on it. But this picture here of this five-hour energy, the guy by the five-hour energy creator, that seat looks like just two boards on it's just the flattest, most uncomfortable-looking seat I've ever seen on a recumbent bike. And maybe that will discourage people to use it so they'll plug into the grid. I don't know. They need to consult the bicycling community as to what needs to be comfortable to pedal this thing. Anyway, that's my opinion on that. And, you know, there's other electricity sources out there. I guess depending on your homeowners association, maybe you could put a windmill on your house, but I don't think that's likely to happen. You know, people don't like the dead birds falling in their yards. I have enough problems with birds getting in my little courtyard garden and poking around and pooping around and eating the berries off my little Malabar spinach or whatever. But I certainly don't want dead birds falling around in my yard with a windmill over my head. So I don't know. It just seems like that's a big undertaking. And then there's different solar power systems out there. You know, you can buy them outright and put them on your roof and power your house. And then you have to figure out a way to make it work at night. Maybe you have the pedal bike at night and you have this thing in the daytime. Everything requires batteries so that you can generate the energy and then disperse it as you need it. And that's part of what's been holding back the solar energy industry was the development of batteries. But, you know, they say that the battery industry is developing well. And, you know, if they can drive golf carts, you know, they can drive this solar power thing. And so there's different laws and configurations for solar power. The absolutely cheapest way to get started is there are companies out there that will essentially rent you the panels. You call them up, they come, they install them on your roof, and then you pay them for your electricity, but you pay less than you would pay the local utility. So, it reduces your bill, but it doesn't eliminate it, and you're on somebody's money grid. If you stop paying, I guess they find a way to either repossess or disable the panels on your roof. I don't know. And then some of the utility companies have methods where you pay that. They just designate a certain portion of the electricity that they generate as solar paneled, and they promise you they've got a field of solar panels somewhere where they're generating their electricity aside from their coal power plants and their whatever other fuels they're using. But they promise you that a certain portion is solar powered, and you can designate that you want your electricity to come from the solar powers, and then for your trouble, you pay them 15% more. That's what Tucson Electric Power does. So you pay them more than you would be paying if it was just regular electricity, you know, off a fossil fuel. It's you know, I was reading through the paperwork for this one time, and I just was stunned. I was like, so you're paying for the right to be a snoot. And I guess snoots ought to pay to be snoots. It's just one of those things. And then there's the whole involvement with the smart meters. And the whole point of smart meters isn't really to manage, you know, efficient energy management. Because if you had a growing economy, you wouldn't want to manage the energy. You would want people to be creative and all of that, particularly if it's solar power and not fossil fuels. You know, but the whole thing is to monitor on you, and it phones home periodically, and there are people with sensitivities to the radiation that comes out of the smart meters. And so, I don't know. So there's some conflicting stories here. A study, batteries necessary to support solar power don't exist. And I'm really disappointed. That's the Daily Caller published 7 hours ago. Today is September 13th. And, you know, that guy that runs the Daily Caller, Tucker Carlson, I thought better of him, because there are other batteries out there. I mean, I just look at golf carts. You can drive them all over your neighborhood for hours, you know, and depending on what neighborhood you live in, it's whether they're roadworthy there or not. But let me see why he thinks they don't exist. It's a study. Of course, you can commission a study to say anything you want it to say. So this is Andrew Follett is the author at the Daily Caller. And batteries don't work well enough to support solar power in a cost-effective manner, according to research published Monday by Belgian scientists from the Université Libre de Brussels. Well, Brussels, the home of the European Union and the UN, these are people that don't want you to be independent of their world power grid. So right away, I'm suspicious of the source on this. The scientists analyzed data from local energy suppliers, ran it through computer simulations, and found it isn't possible for homes to generate most of their own electricity from solar power and store it in batteries. Well, doesn't it depend on how many solar panels you have and how large your house is and what your requirements are? You know, if you have a whole bank of refrigerators, that's going to use more than somebody that just has one, apartment building versus, you know, if you have an office building, or if you have a big house versus a little house that only needs a little bit of electricity. I mean, they're not even accounting for climate here. What is this? Research has determined that the battery's short lifetime and high prices, as well as fundamental problems, will likely prevent solar power from ever, being viable without lucrative financial incentives from the government. And then you owe the government, and that's their whole point, huh? Photovoltaic solar power systems, coupled with lead acid batteries, do not ensure electrical self-sufficiency for a residence at a reasonable cost, states the study's press release. And they have a link to the press release. The problem starts with the bad timing of the solar energy and energy consumption. While the sun shines at its maximum around midday, most homes consume most in the evening in the morning and in the evening. Add to that the fact that in many countries, most of the solar energy is available in the summer months, and you're set for dark times. Well, you know what? How far north is Brussels? Maybe they have, you know, two-hour days in the wintertime. I'm going to pull up a map of Brussels. I would think the farther north you go, the more solar panels you would have. Pull up map of Brussels. How far north is it? It's pretty far up there. It's not. It's north end of Germany. It is south of Norway and Finland and those kinds of places. But, you know, they're making global statements for people that are living all over the world. I don't think that's just unbelievable to me. So this is not the first research to conclude solar power doesn't work without batteries that don't exist. Scientists from the University of East Anglia reached a similar conclusion in May. Other researchers found as the amount of green energy entering national power grids increases, the negative impacts of wind and solar's volatility will also increase unless better batteries are developed. Additionally, scientists suspect that it may be physically impossible to build those better batteries. All you need is more. I don't get it. If you have batteries that work and they're not holding enough energy for you, you just get more batteries and you hook them up in series or in parallel or however you want to do it. And the research highlights the fact that it is currently impossible to economically store power for times when the sun isn't shining and the wind isn't blowing. And they're saying the same thing as the other study. Purchasing enough batteries to provide just 3 days of storage for an average American household costs about $15,000, and those batteries only last for about 5 years that are difficult to recycle. Well, why do you need to, so say you want to cut that, if maybe you only want 1 day of storage because you're just going to charge them up the next day again. So you cut that by a third, and so $5,000. So for much less than the price of a swimming pool or much less than the price of a car, you know, even $15,000 is considered a reasonably inexpensive for a car. And if you want to store electricity for your house and get yourself off the grid, you know, so that, and it's, you know, because they're thinking that you're only guided by the money. And if you can buy a small car, you can buy one of these things, because it's not all about the money. It's about having control of your own life, and no potentate that lives a few thousand miles away will be able to issue an edict to unplug your house. That's what it's about. You know, there's people that play musical instruments that are worth more than this. So in order for the power grid to function without large-scale energy storage, demand for energy must exactly match supply. No, they're issuing assumptions that are just wrong. Power demand is relatively predictable, and conventional power plants like nuclear plants and natural gas can adjust output accordingly. Solar wind power, however, cannot easily adjust output. They also provide power unpredictably relative to conventional power sources. Oh, this goes on and on. Anyway, that's too bad about that. I'll have to leave an objecting comment. Let's see if there's any comments there. Sometimes I like to check out the comments on these places. Sometimes I leave comments and it's not, oh, you know what? The Daily Caller has so many bloatware scripts that run on it and crash my browser that I have JavaScript turned off on my browser for that site, so it's not going to show me the comments, so I'll have to open another browser. Well, forget that. So let's see. And now here's another one. Science Daily published just yesterday, new technology puts solar power to work all night long. Now that's what we need. Now these people are the more hopeful types, I guess, than those Belgian naysayers. Summary. Oh, this is actually a science study. New technology. It's sciencedaily.com. New technology puts solar power to work all night long. The summary. Current thermal energy storage systems for solar power plants rely on materials of low energy density and thermal conductivity, requiring more material at greater cost to meet storage requirements. To combat this challenge, researchers designed an inexpensive thermal energy storage system that will be significantly smaller with over 20 times better thermal performance than current systems. Wow. Energy storage is crucial for taking full advantage of solar power, which otherwise suffers interruptions from cloudy skies and nightfall. In the past few years, concentrating solar power plants have begun producing additional electricity at night and during peak demand periods by using stored heat energy to propel a steam turbine. Current thermal energy storage systems rely on materials that store less energy per kilogram, requiring more material at a greater cost to meet energy storage requirements. Now researchers at the U.S. Department of Energy, DOE, Argonne National Laboratory, have designed an inexpensive thermal energy storage system that will be significantly smaller and perform more than 20 times better than the current thermal systems. Now, I think that what that means is that it stores heat. And so you better not have one of these things blow up next to your house, because it'll just spew heat everywhere and burn your house. With funding from DOE's Sunshot Initiative, the Argonne team is building a pilot-scale prototype of their high-efficiency latent heat thermal energy storage systems. While this goes on, it's all scientific, and that's a concept I hadn't heard about before. So as it's powering your house, it's heating up this thing. It's dumping any residual heat it's got, and it's intentionally heating up this, I don't know what it is, a giant brick or what? Something that holds heat. And I guess it's well insulated. That's going to, I don't know about that. That might be a hazard. Of course, you're not dealing with all the chemicals that are involved with batteries and stuff. Huh. That one, I think, is a way off from social acceptance. Well, and here's the Press Herald. Where is that? Now, this is going on in Arizona, too. Proposal would phase out incentives for home solar panels. This is going on in Arizona, I know. Current owners would retain the benefits for 15 years, while new owners would see theirs phased out over 10 years. And this is where you produce more electricity than your house can use. And so you sell it back to the grid, I guess, for the right to use the electricity at night, I don't know, off the grid. And they used to buy it from you at the rate that you would pay for it if you were just buying electricity outright. But I know around here, SRP in the Phoenix area, they're looking to only pay you the going wholesale rate instead of the retail rate. So you're not saving as much as you should be saving on your bill by producing all the electricity you could possibly need. Anyway, Hollowell, the Maine Public Utilities Commission is proposing new rules that would phase out incentives for homeowners with solar electric panels. Meeting on Tuesday, commissioners proposed a change that would grandfather incentives for 15 years for residents who already have solar panels at their homes and would limit benefits to new solar panel owners to 10 years. The decades-old incentive requires utilities to pay small energy generators the full retail price for all the electricity they send into the grid. Those payments chiefly help recover the investment in solar electric panels, which can run $10,000 or so on an average home. The proposal acts as a starting point for an overhaul of Maine's net energy billing rule, often called net metering, a controversial practice nationwide. Nationwide, yeah, from Maine to Arizona at least. As solar's popularity grows, utilities say those payments are shifting the cost of serving homes with solar panels onto other customers. That doesn't make sense. Why, just because they're connected to the grid? They'll pull the plug on the grid. Clean energy advocates counter that the value of this energy actually is greater than the cost. Both sides, yeah, if everybody had solar panels, they wouldn't need any fossil fuels to lay out bucks for. Both sides cite figures and studies to support their claims. Dylan Voorhees, Clean Energy Director at the National Resources Council of Maine, said that overall, the PUC's proposal weakened net metering and moves the discussion around solar in the wrong direction. Well, this goes on and on and on, but that's the same thing is going on here in Arizona. So I know there's all kinds of kits out there and do-it-yourself instructions for building solar panels. Here's another article from September 11th, just a couple days ago, Solar Support on the Rise. So, you know, as the public is gaining more interest in it, of course, the local utilities are feeling it in the pocketbook, and well, they should, because, you know, utilities are utilities. They should be serving you. They shouldn't necessarily be all profit-driven. They should be community-driven, at least, you know, in my thought. It's kind of like a credit union kind of thing, you know, an energy co-op. And I know years ago when I lived down in Sierra Vista, Arizona, that, what is it, Sulphur Springs Valley Electric is an electric co-op. Now, I'm not sure how that worked because I was just renting an apartment at the time I was young. But these can be arranged as co-ops. We don't have to have megacorps doing this kind of thing. So electricity, that's the first grid we're talking about. The next grid, you know what? Let me take a quick break here and get caught up in one moment. I'll find the right button here.
Vaccines are required for students, employees, immigrants, military members, and international travel. Do you know how to legally avoid them? This is vaccine rights attorney and Freedomizer radio host Alan Phillips. My vaccine exemption ebook can help you avoid the mistakes that have cost others their exemption rights. Get the authoritative guide to vaccine legal exemptions, an ebook available at freedomizerradio.com and vaccinerights.com.
Let freedom ring throughout the land.
How would you like to make your work more enjoyable, be more creative and relaxed, all while sitting at your desk? That's exactly what my Serenity Rug has done for me. This revolutionary footrest, I can't even call it a footrest, because this thing encourages movement of your feet, which results in more blood flow. While traditional footrests advocate the motionless placement of your feet, I found that I'm unconsciously digging my feet into the long, soft grass strands of the Serenity Rug. It delivers an incredibly relaxing sensation that closely resembles the feeling of an exotic foot massage. If you have ever had a foot massage that made you want to stay there for hours, you know what I'm talking about. If you have not heard about the Serenity Rug, check them out at serenityrug.com and join the exclusive Serenity Rug community and enjoy a feeling of comfort and relaxation that most will never experience. They've sold out before, so I suggest you do your feet a favor and grab one of these. Again, that's serenityrug.com.
U.S. trade negotiators are pushing to complete the TPP this year. They're trying to keep it under the radar. The best way to stop the TPP is to drag it into the light of day. Right now, negotiators have appointed approximately 600 corporate lobbyists to serve as cleared advisors on the TPP, while refusing to release any of their negotiating proposals for public review. The corporate media is unlikely to inform the public about the TPP. We need to do it ourselves.
Well, there was one more here and I lost it. Oh, well. So we'll catch up on those at the next break. So if we all want to be independent from the grids and anybody that might exert power over our lives, I mean, these technologies all need to be developed for space travel, too, if we're actually going to go settle other planets. And, you know, in a past show, we covered some of this stuff. There are people out there and some astronauts who believe that there is other life out there and other ships floating around, and it's all very vague, and who knows really what's going on. But this universe is too big for me to think that we're alone. But, you know, certainly the picture of Mars shows that it's pretty barren. If there's life there, it's not a lot. It's bacteria or something very small, or maybe it's completely underground. I don't know. And the UN wants to get involved in regulating us. Now that we're already there, the UN wants to stop us from dipping our probe toes in this frozen lake that they're down. We might leave a bacteria from Earth. We can't pollute it with Earth germs. When, you know, I know people that helped design that probe, and they work really hard to make sure that we don't send any microbes from Earth to Mars to possibly affect the flora and fauna there. Now, that I don't know how that conflicts with the idea of colonizing planets and sending manned settlements there. So I don't know what they're thinking. Are they going to hermetically seal these settlements? I mean, we tried that. It was called Biosphere 2, north between Arizona and Phoenix. like a couple decades ago, where they designed this thing, and the Earth being the original biosphere, and they had this hermetically sealed. It was like a giant terrarium with plants, and they tried to get totally off the grid. You know, they had little gardening farms in there, and people lived in there for a year, and the intention was that, you know, in their own water filtration and sanitation and all this stuff, and the intention was to try colonizing our own planet, you know, where if somebody got sick, we could get them out, you know, before actually trying it on another planet. And what they found at the time was that they couldn't possibly hermetically seal it, that there was encroachment of life from outside getting into the biosphere too. So now it's a tourist place. They might be conducting some more experiments there. I don't know, but one of those things. But these are things that, you know, in time that we should, you know, get a grip on. And certainly we all want to get rid of power mongers over our heads. So I've kind of listed several different grids, that, why I'm using plural. There's the electricity grid that we want to disengage from. There's, I've posted all these different articles in here. Sanitation, there's, you know, everybody's got to use a toilet of some kind. And here in India, though, they're putting up billboards now trying to get people that are, now that the country is advancing as far as wealth and things like that, getting people, the people with the new money there, the nouveau riche, trying to teach them to use toilets. So they have billboards up, you know, trying to promote toilets so that they can actually get a handle on their sanitation and people aren't squatting in the open, which I guess has been the tradition there. I don't know. I've never been to India. But there's things called composting toilets. If you don't want to involve the sanitation system with the water system, water delivery versus water sewage, they can be. I know they bill separately on at least on the bills, the water bills that we get. You know, they come in the same paper, but they're listed separately. Presumption is that you send out as much water as you take in. But if you have a swimming pool and you spill the swimming pool, you're dealing with evaporation. You're not actually sending it back into the sewage system, so they're billing you for water. You're not sending through. But anyway, so I have some links to composting toilets. I've heard that they're popular at some campgrounds, and I've seen them at national forests and things like that, where they're not going to run an entire water system just to out into the woods for the campers and stuff. And I've seen some of these gardening shows on YouTube. There are some people that really do, it's their goal to live off the grid, and they've got these composting toilets, and some of them will even reuse some of that stuff in their own gardens, which kind of nauseates me, that concept. But, when you get food poisoning in produce, that kind of is where it comes from, is people defecating in the field. But the way the one gardener put it, he goes, well, I know my own health status, and I know what I'm eating and what I'm putting out, and so I'm okay with it, but you don't have to be okay with it. So I was like, I'm not okay with it. But yeah, I could see on a moon station somewhere or an extraplanetary settlement, I could see the purpose of repurposing the compost from the toilet to the farm, and, you know, everything goes in its own cycle. So logically, I can get it. I just don't have my heart in that one yet. But there's a list. You can buy a composting toilet right off of Amazon, I guess, deliver it to your home. I don't know. Well, you know, if you're living in a you know, developed town, if you're not out in the sticks somewhere, I don't know what you'd do with it. But I know you can buy it. I wonder what they go for. $1,000 on sale, $960. Nature's Head dry composting toilet. Well, it's a lovely piece of work. Anyway, hey, if you want to join the conversation, the phone number here is, 347-324-3704, 327-324-3704. And if you'd like to join the conversation, dial 1, and I'll welcome you in, and we can chat and talk. And we're also experimenting with a new chat program on Freedomizer Radio. And if you go to the front page of Freedomizer, there's a join chat button, and it'll lead you to logging in or creating a profile, and then just refresh your Listen Live page. It's actually in the Listen Live page, and once you log in, you refresh that page, and it should should get you in there. So, hold on one. Here's somebody. Hello. You're on.
Hello. Hi, Suzanne.
Is this Ed?
It's Ed.
Hi.
Yes.
You got some
nice
thoughts.
Nice to talk to you again. You know, people these days, the younger people, especially in cities, maybe not so much on farms, they don't know how good they have it. When I was a little boy, I grew up on this in an orchard in Santa Clara, California, before it became Silicon Valley. And we had behind a big hedge behind our house, the garden hedge, there were what we called the prune pickers' cabins. And the prune pickers, who were the Mexican migrant workers, you know, under the Bracero program that they had in California in the 1950s, they would come in there just during the summer months, June, July, August, and they would pick the prunes, and they would pick the apricots and the walnuts and whatnot, you know. They were making, I don't know, what, 25 cents a box or something like that, you know. And these poor people in the early 50s, they had to use what can only be called privies or outhouses. And there were two of them. One was in one side of the of their, you know, complex, and one was on the other side. And, oh, my goodness, you know, if I went walking through that orchard, I would have to be careful what direction the wind was blowing, because you wouldn't want to walk within 100 or 200 feet of one of those privies, you know, on a day when the wind was gusting in your direction, because they were very fragrant, you know, very smelly.
Wow.
And this was only cured about 1957, 58, 59, something like that, when they came in there and they laid down some concrete, they laid down some water pipes, and they gave them, you know, real indoor toilets. But not in their room, not in the rooms where they were living, but like in a complex, like, a, you know, like you'd see at a gas station, like, you know, like four or five
shared,
toilets.
A shared community
like
toilet?
Yes, exactly. But they were water flushing toilets. But when I was a little kid, that was what they were using. Now, we actually had a bathroom. We actually had bathroom and running water and everything. But I just can't imagine those people living like that, and that they that the entire third world, and actually the entire United States was doing that until they got you know, running water and pipes.
Yeah, they had outhouses. Yeah, there's a song from Oklahoma. Everything's up to date in Kansas City, and you know, the indoor privies. It is a pretty funny song, yeah. So,
when did they do that?
Yeah, actually, the movie Oklahoma is set in the late 1800s. The song is about installing indoor plumbing in Kansas City. Everything's up to date, you know. But, you know, this is all related to that Zika stuff we were talking about last week and the week before, too, with, you know, the Memphis, the American plague of, it wasn't Zika, but it was yellow fever, and that, a lot of that was tied to the outhouses where the mosquitoes are breeding.
Sanitation.
And, you know, the book, The American Plague. And so, you know, they're spraying down Florida now. And you'd be hard-pressed to find any outhouses in Florida. You know, so they're spraying these people down for Zika now. And, you know.
Yeah. Some out-of-the-way places undoubtedly still have them. I can't imagine a worse you know, sensation and sitting down in one of those outhouses and being attacked by dozens and dozens of mosquitoes, you know.
Yeah, terrible. I wonder what how they dealt with that. Of course, the summer is worse than the winter, but you know, you either freeze your tush or you get it bit up.
And I don't know. I think they do it as quick as they can, as quickly as they possibly can.
Yeah, get the heck out of there.
There's also the ancient tradition of the chamber pot, where you'd keep a pot under the bed at night or something and use
that's
it
very ancient,
and then
yeah.
go dump it out in the morning or something, you know. You can sort of, that way if there's hordes of mosquitoes outside, you don't have to go out there and rub noses with them.
Yeah.
Know?
Now what I've heard about these dry composting toilets is that they do a lot to minimize the smell. There was like one of the rest stops in Arizona along the freeways had dry composting toilets, but I heard about it from other Arizonans. I've never seen them, but the story is they don't smell. I don't know. And here's people buy.
Do they do that naturally, Or did they do that through some kind of harsh chemicals?
Somehow. But it looks like on Amazon, they sell them together with coconut coir, which is compressed coconut hulls that are, you know, shredded and compressed. And, you know, you wet them and they expand. Now, I've only seen coconut coir before with gardeners. It's a very nice replacement for peat moss. And coconut husk is replaceable because you grow new coconuts every year. But whereas peat moss is, you're digging it up. It's some kind of compressed, I don't know, compressed organic matter from, they actually quarry it like, you know, like rocks, but they're digging up this peat moss stuff.
Been there for thousands of years.
And it's not necessarily replaceable. It's not necessarily replaceable. So there's a lot of gardeners in the name of sustainability will prefer coconut coir, and it's a little more expensive than peat moss. But so that must be somehow that it functions with these dry composting toilets. This, you know, you can put coconut coir right in your garden and you stir it up with your garden soil and your fertilizer and your rock dust and your, you know, actual garden, you know, kitchen compost stuff. So they're using it somehow. So I don't really understand how they work. I would have to analyze it to see how they work. But anyway, that's a surprise to me to see the coconut coir.
If only that had been discovered 100 years ago, you know.
Well, shipping coconut coir, I mean, the U.S. isn't exactly a powerhouse of coconut production. Yes, we have Hawaii, and there's probably some coconut production in Florida, but there's, you know, there's all these other countries that grow a lot more coconuts than we do. I think Vietnam grows a lot of coconuts, and the Philippines, and Indonesia and all this. And so we're shipping coconut coir around the world to put in our toilets and our gardens. I don't know.
Yeah.
It just seems like it's not exactly sustainable. We'd have to ship all the coconut coir to the moon. It's spelled C-O-I-R, and I don't really know how to pronounce it. I've heard people call it coir, coconut coir.
And, I'm not sure what the word is.
It's C-O-I-R. And I guess we could send plant some coconuts on Mars if we can get them to grow in the Martian climate. Which,
all kinds of little bugs and bacteria and stuff to Mars if we did that, right? We would be polluting Mars with bacteria and stuff and viruses.
Yeah. So I think that there are people out there that don't want our influence anywhere else off the planet, off the Earth, which I think is part of what's driving the depopulation agenda by the globalists.
Mm.
Because if they let us keep living, some of us are going to escape the planet and we're going to actually affect another planet. And you know what? That's life. That's just life. And so many
Suzanne,
of these places don't have any life. You know, who are we hurting? What?
Suzanne, a couple of weeks ago in one of your podcasts, you were talking about UFOs and space aliens and stuff. Maybe this is an agenda that's being imposed on us by some, you know, alien race or something like that, or reptilians or whatever it is, who don't want human beings at their highest potential going out into outer space, you know?
Yeah, well, you know what? They don't own the universe. That much I'm sure of. They don't own the universe. The universe is big enough for all of us. That much I am sure of. So they can just go pound sand. I don't know. So there's all these images. So maybe we should just think about, okay, on the Earth, we want to get off the power grid of other human beings. And yes, these technologies could be useful on other planets, and some of them couldn't. And I think that coconut coir stuff would not necessarily be useful on another planet. But, you know, I know there's some kind of recycling system on this space station where they're recycling water. And I know Los Angeles just installed recycling sewage water into drinkable water. So they must have some super duper filtration systems. I don't know. It's hard to even think
about.
If a bunch of
coconut trees suddenly disappear, maybe they were taken by aliens out into space to use for recycling, you know, for
I don't know. I mean, they could just
on their
plant them and grow their own, you know. So there's so I have a couple other grids here also on my list. Food security, and that's a big one. Growing your own food, because there was this I guess it was last week. The powers, the big agro crony powers and government had a big clash with a big organic food festival in Sonoma County. And we heard one of my favorite online gardeners, John Kohler. He's got a YouTube channel with well over 1,000 videos now teaching all aspects of organic gardening and just philosophy and stuff like that. Because he had a health issue, and so he got into organic gardening really so he would have control of what he was eating. And that's what it's about, is control. He invests in his garden, and he buys a coconut coir and the peat moss and all the different soils and amendments and rock dust and filtration for the water that he waters his plants with. And, he's got it down to science, and he goes over all this stuff on his channel. He's just fun to watch. But he had a thing today with a buddy of his that lives in Sonoma County, and they had a big festival that's internationally known, this organic festival. And they have what happened was that festival is 6 years old, and this year in the sixth year, the government jackboots came in with their clipboards, and they started fining all the exhibitors there for giving out samples of food. So if you hand somebody an organic apple without paying the food tasting license fee, you got slapped with a fine of like $750. And these people are all living, right at the, barely making a sustainable living, and farmers don't make all that much money, and getting hit with these fines really has a chilling effect. And so the article, uproar over Sonoma County's handling of National Heirloom Exposition. This is all about organic heirloom vegetables and fruits. That heirloom means non-GMO, and non-GMO means Monsanto doesn't control it, and the big agri doesn't control it. And so now that it's got international attention and people traveling from all over the world to come to this Sonoma County exhibition, they had to jackboot on it and just try to keep it from growing. So the article goes, vendors and exhibitors at a popular natural foods event contend they were harassed and unfairly targeted by Sonoma County health inspectors, who cracked down this week with fees and fines as well as permit requirements that weren't there before. Organizers of the National Heirloom Exposition at the Sonoma County Fairgrounds said previous health inspectors were positive and supportive of the three-day event, which ended Thursday, but this year was different. Organic apples donated to expo attendees required a tasting permit, who's ever heard of such a thing, to be given away along with other produce, according to organizers, who said approximately two dozen vendors were hit with fees and fines totaling hundreds of dollars and as much as $750. Organizers said the treatment by health inspectors threatens the future of the heirloom exposition, which draws more than 15,000 people. They said it makes it challenging for the participation of backyard farmers and hobbyists who can't give away an apple or tomato without a permit. Excuse me. We feel that we're not really wanted, said farming entrepreneur Jerry Gettle, who co-founded the Heirloom Festival and the Petaluma Seed Bank. It's taken the heart out of the event, said the World's Pure Food Fair. The nonprofit exposition celebrates traditional crops, food, seeds, poultry, and livestock. Small gardeners and large farmers have fruits and vegetables for show and tasting. Participants complained that vendors of sealed packages of seeds, grain, and flour were, quote-unquote, harassed for selling food without a license. A sealed package of seeds, is that a food? I mean, it's not a food until you take it home and grow it. It's just outrageous. County health officials said they are just following the law. Well, did the law change between last year and this? I don't know. Quote, our environmental health inspectors visited for a required as mandated by the California Retail Food Code, said Dr. Stephen Betts, director of the Department of Health Services, in a prepared statement. California law requires permitting of food vendors, including those at a temporary food facility who are giving away food or selling packaged or unpackaged foods. He added that inspectors did not shut down any vendor during the exposition, but Gettle said a few vendors appeared to have left as a result, and at least a dozen were fined. He said county inspectors in the past might require people who serve cut fruit to have a permit, are not whole fruits like they did this year. You know, an orange in a sealed peel is that's not a hazard to anyone. They reinterpret the law after all these years, he asserted. They reinterpreted the law after all these years, he asserted, adding that it seemed less about health concerns and more about collecting money. I was outraged, said Josh Cunning, a Roanert Park man who was not singled out by health inspectors but has participated in the expo for 5 years, selling a soil nourishing tonic. Well, I've seen this guy before, and he's real good, and he's a friend with John Kohler, the video guy I watch, and he's got his own thing. He sells Boogie Brew, which is a fertilizer kind of thing. You know, it's a compost tea, and you put it on your plants. I mean, it's labeled tea, but it's not tea for human consumption. It's for your plants. And he didn't want to use this article as a advertising, so he said a soil nourishing tonic. And he also sells filters to put in your hoses to take a lot of the toxins out of the water that you're putting in your garden, because once it's in your garden, maybe it gets in your food and you don't want to eat it and you want to grow organically. Anyway, I'm sure the health department's job is to ensure the citizenry's public health, he said. In my humble opinion, they stepped way over the line. He said the event is intended as an acknowledgement that health is our only wealth, and there is nothing unhealthy in giving away a free apple or a packet of seeds. And goes on a bit. Where did it go? I scrolled too far. Efren Carrillo, chairman of the County Board of Supervisors, said he fielded numerous emails and a few phone calls from expo participants complaining about the inspectors. Carrillo is meeting Monday with health officials as well as expo organizers and farm trails representatives to gather more information about what occurred. I don't know the full details and what we need to correct, he said, but he said the county and health officials are committed to being very supportive of our ag partners. Now, ag partners, in that video that I watched with John Kohler and Josh Cunning, they target partners as meaning big agri, that the big farming conglomerates marched in there, and they want this thing shut down. If small farming takes hold and becomes the norm in the country, you know, they have automated, I know they're robotizing a lot of stuff. You can robotize a whole, you know, back room of your house with hydroponic farming. You know, if this catches hold and you don't need their grid anymore, that, you know, they got to find another line of work. And that's just too much trouble. Anyway, Gettle said the diverse event draws people from many other states and outside the country, including hippie types and Mennonites, all gathered to celebrate food. Well, I object to the term hippie type because my experience in the 60s and 70s was that hippies were really mean people. So I wish they would just say, you know, earth types, earth type people. And your experience is probably different about hippies, but that was, you know, I wish they hadn't used that term. That just, it's a trigger word for me. Trigger. I'm offended. Anyway, organizers say proceeds above expenses from the expo are donated to local school and educational garden projects. So did they find these people for donating the seeds to their local garden school education? I don't know. Gettle said this year 160 pallets of food from the heirloom exposition were donated to food pantries, schools, and churches. It was also inspected by these goons, along with 90,000 pounds of watermelon and squash. He said that if participants don't feel they can cooperate, that they can operate without feeling safe and being able to afford it, the South Bay and Los Angeles are options for relocation. So this guy is talking about moving out of Sonoma, which is unacceptable to people that live up there, according to these gardeners that we heard talk this morning. Anyway, but he said, Sonoma County is one of the most supportive for locally grown and organic food. We wanted to stay here. We built such a network, he said. Carrillo also wants to ensure the event stays. This is an exposition that draws national and international attention, he said, calling it a homegrown event. My hope is we'll be able to keep it here. So that's... listening to these people talk about what they witnessed, it's like the event is 3 days long. It's a Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. I guess it was last week. And on the second day, a bunch of bureaucrats and clipboards descended. They swarmed in all at once and just started harassing the vendors simultaneously. you know, looking for packets of food or packets of seeds and not having a tasting permit. So it just reeks of Agenda 21 to me. You know, that or Agenda 30, the whole thing about being on the grid and the Agenda 21, they have what do they call it? The Codex Alimentarius, if I'm pronouncing it right, where they will define what seeds that you're allowed to share and sell. And everything has to be categorized. If you come up with a hybrid, you have to get approval from these globalists. And it's all intertwined, and they don't even acknowledge this here. And I wrote to John Kohler. I said, hey, this involves the globalists. This isn't just your local officials, you know. And they said, if they don't straighten up, we'll just have to vote them out next year. And no, because the big money will just come in and buy out the next group of officials that you vote in. What it's going to take is sending people to jail for taking the bribes, for harassing. And why did the county suddenly switch from being on the side of the local farmers to viewing them as adversaries? What caused that flip? Well, it's big money. It's big money. It's international big pharma, SARMA. And that's how these things work. That's what this election is all about, because people are done with it and they want to start sending people to jail. So I want to send people to jail, that's for sure. Anyway, one other note about food security and keeping your food off the grid, whether you're gardening at home or not, getting your appliances off the grid. A relative recently bought a brand new refrigerator, and I guess they don't make them anymore, that they don't want to hook into your Wi-Fi. And the kitchen of the future knows what's in your fridge, and they're going to tell Big Brother, I suppose, what you're eating. And, of course, it's all tied into Obamacare, so you can pay your carbon taxes if you have too many milk crates in there or whatever. The experience is familiar to anyone, so I have the link, and it goes over to Bloomberg.com. The experience is familiar to anyone who regularly cooks at home. You're at the supermarket picking up ingredients for tonight's dinner, but you simply cannot remember if you already have heavy cream. You do remember buying it, so you skip it at the store and pat yourself on the back for saving a few bucks and not contributing to society's insane food waste problem. Then you get, and that's got a link, so they've got a story about that. You know, USDA got dug up, huh? Then you get home and discover, yes, you have heavy cream, but it's expired. Yes, you're not making that fancy dessert you had planned. But what if you could actually see the contents of your fridge from the supermarket aisle? This is one solution that Innit Inc., a Silicon Valley-based technology company, hopes to provide busy home cooks through its connected food platform. Now, what's the date on this? Because they're already selling fridges that are prompting you to get on your Wi-Fi system. It's just, I find it creepy as heck. You know, if you don't remember, you know what? You've got a little smartphone. Take a snapshot of your open refrigerator door if you want to remember whether you have heavy cream at home or not. You know, it's just, I don't know, it's just taking all the knowledge off your brain. I mean, if you can't remember what you've got at home, or maybe you have a housemate and you don't know what's at home, that's something different. But it just takes over every human activity, even remembering what's in your refrigerator. And I find it, extra creepy. So this relative, there's other people in the house there, and they're arguing about whether the refrigerator has the right to the Wi-Fi password or not. So I guess maybe they'll come with their own cell phone numbers, like home security systems. You know, who knows? So anyway, I think I better take one more break before we, because we end up at about 6 here. So let me take another break here.
You know the Constitution like the back of your hand. You've read books, listened to podcasts, attended lectures, surfed websites, and watched videos. You've made liberty your life's goal, but something seems to be missing. Stickers from libertystickers.com. Exercise your freedom of speech with the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. That's libertystickers.com. But wait.
There's more. You can buy Liberty stickers wholesale. Get them for 99 cents each when you put 100 or more in your shopping cart in any combination. Sell them or give them away. They're great for gun shows, flea markets, fairs, outreach, and more. Earn extra money, promote freedom, and spread the word. Need custom stickers, labels, or decals for your organization or business? Liberty Stickers makes them. Go to libertystickers.com to order or call 877-873-9626. Libertystickers.com, the world's most dangerous stickers.
I am an autonomous government agent here to steal your livelihood.
Not so fast. I'm Sovereign Filing Solutions.
And I'm the Sovereign. We're teamed up.
To bring you...
the truth without censorship.
Are you tired of being fed multi-million-dollar media lies?
Are you ready for the real story?
Sovereign Filing Solutions has teamed up with the Sovereign newspaper to make sure you get it.
And not the BS this guy behind me wants to feed you.
Take the step, help make the change.
Oh, come on, that's not even fair. How are we supposed to rule indiscriminately if you know what's going on?
Play on, play that. Play on, play that. Yo, Drink drops the verse.
I like the way you grow it, no pesticides. I got to box it up.
Box it up now.
I like the way you grow it, so locally. I got to box it up. I like the way you grow it, with no GMOs. I like the way you twerk it, no diggity, no doubt.
We've got squash and peas, calling it a pack for all your bees. Melons you wanna squeeze. Yes, please. Yes, please.
Hey, now that plant looks good.
I wanna grow it. I wanna taste it.
Search YouTube for Freaks of the Garden. PeacefulBelly.com. Support your local organic farmer.
Freaks of the Garden. I'll have to check that one out on YouTube. Support your local farmer, indeed. And I know some of the grocery stores do support local farmers, and the organic section of a lot of grocery stores are expanding, and they're local, and they're mindful of all the trucking costs of trucking things interstate. But some things grow better in some places than others. So if you're growing your own food locally, there are things that just won't grow for you, and that's different for every gardening zone. And it's kind of fascinating, you know, you grow what you can grow and you want to be off the grid. But, you know, some trade for exotic things like avocados from California or whatever that doesn't grow locally, then, you know, that's an exotic treat. I remember, you know, growing up as a kid when berries were seasonal. You only got them in the summertime. And now they're hydroponically grown somewhere. I don't even know where they're grown. And they truck them in and like every other day they're on steep discount in the grocery store and I can get a stack of them. And, you know, I just get a stack and keep them in the freezer and throw them in my smoothie. And that's all a wonderful thing, too. So there's a trade-off for going totally off-grid, is that you're going to be limited by what you can grow in your own property, in your own residence, if you're going to do hydroponic. Well, if you're hydroponic, I guess, I don't know how well all plants take to that. But, you know, there's locally here, there's this moringa tree that, it's not actually local to Arizona. It comes from, where did it come from? I think Asian, Indonesia and stuff. And supposedly there's a big campaign to get a lot of people to grow it, particularly in third world villages and things, because it's so nutritionally complete, you almost don't have to eat anything else. But, you know, the taste is a little bit tough and wild. But it's, you know, I've tried the powder from, you know, you can certainly buy the powder from Amazon. If your goal is just to be super healthy, you can get this food supplement powder and put it in your green smoothies and all this. But, you know, I ordered some seeds too, and I've managed to grow. I've got three in a pot right now, and I really haven't eaten much off these trees. But my goal is to get them in the ground here because they will grow taller than the house. And, you know, it's all kind of fun and good. And, you know, I don't think I'll ever be able to get 100% off the grid. But these things are fun and they're exotic, and you can't buy moringa in the grocery store. Maybe not yet anyway. Maybe the powder. You can't get the powder, I believe, in Sprouts. But you can't get the fresh leaves. And what was the other one I was thinking of? Oh, there's this weed that grows all over the country. I've seen it in Arizona in the spring, and I've seen it in Maryland from one end of the country to the other, called, it's mallow, common mallow, or Malva neglecta is the scientific name for it. And it's like spinach. It's not the same shape as spinach, but it's a small little leaf like that, and you can pick it, and you can throw it in your salad, throw it in your soup, and make it wilt, and, you know, make a nice soup out of it. Throw it into chicken and whatever. And but it wilts really quickly after picking, so there's no way it can survive shipment. And those are the kind of things that maybe you want to grow too. The things that don't survive shipment, and so you're never going to find them in a grocery store. And you know, if you want all these different taste sensations, and my favorite online gardener, John Kohler, he likes to grow things that he can't get in grocery stores because he likes all these different sensations, and maybe some things he doesn't like as well as others, but he usually likes them all, and it's just, you know, it's just an adventurous spirit kind of thing. So it's not entirely about getting off grid. Some of it's just experimental, but if you just rely on the people shuffling the press pieces around, the chess pieces around the board, you're going to be very limited as to what you can eat. And I like to try different food things. You know, I had kind of a reputation as a kid. You know, I would try anything, and my brother and sister would laugh at me. But that's just the breaks there. So there's one other technology here that I want to talk about that's a good way, and that's just plain manufacturing, just the goods and things that you have in your home. And the big thing now is 3D printing. Of course, you need a computer and electricity to do this kind of stuff, and you need to buy the materials to feed the 3D printer. But, you know, if you're just buying raw materials, you have more control and more variety of the kinds of things you can own. And I know there's a lot of Second Amendment people out there. I remember the big fuss a couple of years ago. Somebody published a 3D file of a gun, and they actually fired it. And that got Homeland Security all upset, and they sent them a letter asking them please to take the file down, and last I knew they did. But, you know, if you can design things under 3D, you know, design programs, and you know enough about firearms, you can design your own, and how can they stop that? You know, of course, I guess they can designate you a criminal, just like if you grow one of God's plants, a cannabis plant, they'll come arrest you too. So at least in this state, I don't know, we got an election coming up. And I'm not big on mind-altering recreation. You know, I don't drink and I don't drink and I don't smoke and I don't whatever. It's all these different vices. It's a little song. But anyway, but there's you can design stuff, and then there are companies that will print for you, 3D print these little devices, and you can design little gadgets that you can sell online, and it's like almost like Cafe Press. But Shapeways is a place, Consumer Goods, let's see, there's I have some articles linked to that also on 3D printing, and I'm sure that they would use that kind of a thing on space settlements, planetary settlements. You know, you have a broken part, you can just pull it up out of the catalog and 3D print it right there and repair whatever it is that broke on you. So I can see it will have long-term effects, but it won't necessarily solve everything. You know, some things just, I don't know, maybe they're too large 3D print, or take away the joy of knitting and joy of crochet. That's like the original 3D printing was like knitting and sewing, you know, the parts and following patterns and directions. You just did it with your hands. And the materials, you know, the fabrics and the yarns and the threads and all that. And anyway, Oh yeah, bricklaying too. So I've got somebody kibitzy in the background. Yeah, the bricklaying will do it. But anyway, hey Eddie, you still there?
Yes, actually.
Awesome color.
Hi.
Oh. So did your mom used to make stuff? Did she used to knit when you were a kid, or macrame or pots, anything like that?
She used to darn. She used to darn my, you know, torn pants or shirts or whatever. She used to, you know, be pretty good with a knitting needle. Sure. She used to do that.
Yeah,
and
I had friends.
Yeah,
I had German friends growing up, people from the old country, Germany, and that they knitted all the time. That was their thing. You know, it was considered a waste of time to sit in front of a television set and not be busy knitting something. And that's the original home manufacturing kind of thing, you know.
Oh, yeah,
I prefer crocheting myself.
Yeah. Crochet, yeah. Well, she knit a little bit, but I never paid much attention to that kind of stuff. You know, she was very handy. She would do things like, she would get 20 or 30 of these old mason jars, you know, with, I think the brand name was Ball, B-A-L-L, you know, and she would cook up the, you know, she would cook up the rhubarb or the berries, you know, the whatever, and she would make them into jams and jellies, and she'd put them up, you know, and just leave them on the shelf there for, you know, we had jams.
So you can have them later in the year when they're out of season, right? When they're out of season, right?
That's right. All winter we could have those. Sure.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, how fast can anybody eat a nice big jar of jam? You know, it's going to take a while. A week or two.
Yeah, it depends on the size of the jar.
Yeah. Lots of sugar.
Yeah, so the more you can do for yourself. I'm sorry?
Just a little. She was very clever, but probably not so much with the knitting and stuff like that. Oh, she had an old Singer sewing machine that was dated about 1910 or something like that, you know, and she would use that. And it folded up, you know what I mean? Like the part of it would fold down into the body of the contraption, you know. And, oh, she did all kinds of stuff with that. Oh, it had a foot pedal. So she would be, that was what would power it. No electricity at all, right? All she would do is move that foot pedal, and then the sewing machine would spring into action. You know, you just go ta 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 ta.
Like a wind up Victrola.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what we need around the house: is more wind up appliances, so we're not all dependent on electricity, even.
Yeah. Who needs electricity?
Yeah, but I know all those wind-up flashlights and radios that we've bought through the years, the battery would not hold a charge at all. They were total garbage, so I wouldn't recommend that to anybody. I've never, you know, that happened like several times. We bought one of these things, and it was just a gimmick for sale. It just didn't work. So, here's an article here. 3D manufacturing. Yeah, they're included, but they just don't hold anything. They're just garbage batteries,
they can do better. Improved. They really need to be improved, even for electric cars and for everything, you know, south of electric cars down to the tiniest.
Well, I know people that have
an
electric car. Yeah, but you know, the range of electric car from the people that I know that have one is about 80 miles. So it's not like something that you would want to take cross country. They use it for commuting to work. But they can't use it to, like, drive to Flagstaff to see their daughters, you know?
That wouldn't get you from Phoenix to Tucson, 80 miles. No,
it won't even get you there. So they just drive it for commuting to work around town.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's good, but they still have to have another car that actually has a gas tank so they can get somewhere, you know, of any distance. Here's an article in the Dayton Daily News, and this is back from 2013, 3D Manufacturing, the Next Industrial Revolution. Advances in 3D manufacture technology are heralding the next industrial revolution, declare researchers and executives of large regional jet engine manufacturer GE Aviation. Expected to be the biggest change in industry in decades, 3D or additive manufacturing is the process of creating a solid object from a digital file, with the computer file specifying the design and dimension of a good. Well, it doesn't have to be a computer file. As you know, we're talking about sewing patterns and knitting patterns, just like that. You know, just the floor plan of a house is a design. A machine is programmed to print a thin layer upon layer of material until it grows the object from the bottom up. Well, there's different styles of 3D printing. And this also, yeah, my daughter's really into the paper crafting. She'll actually design the 3D file and have it print out, and it's like one of those 3D puzzles. And it's got the little flaps on it. She folds things together, and they can be quite intricate. And she's really good at making movie props for cosplayers. And that's what this is about. And so she designs a 3D file, and then to save the expense of buying a 3D printer and the weight of the material, she can do these things out of paper, and then she puts some kind of a rosin on them to harden them. And she's got these chain of events of all these different softwares that she uses, and then these, you know, physical tools that she uses to get her product out there. And it's quite elaborate, and the results are really beautiful. I mean, they look like, you know, she'll make swords from some movie, and it'll look like the real thing. So, you know, it's just amazing. So that's called paper crafting, and not that many people are aware of paper crafting out there, but it is related to 3D printing. And you know, you can't knit a sword, but you can certainly paper craft.
When she was very young, didn't she make a whole bunch of tiny, tiny birds out of some kind of shiny paper? What were those?
Yeah.
What were those birds she was making?
They were origami cranes. She was an origami expert, at a very young age. And advanced onto paper crafting. Yeah, the paper crafting. She's got a whole bunch of followers, like, I don't know, 800 followers or something over on DeviantArt. And
Suzanne, you should bring her on your show sometime.
Yeah, I think I should do that. I should do that. I tried to twist her arm today, and she just didn't want to do it. But I am running out of time here, and I apologize. And, you know, there's all different things you can do to get at least unentangle yourself as much as possible from the grid. And I've got a bunch of articles over on the madscientist.exposed website. So everybody, and I'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.
It's giving me warnings here, and it's ignored. I gotta hit this thing. It's giving me warnings. Where do I get it? There it is. Okay, everybody, have a great week.